Okay, thanks, Sean. So Sean basically asked me to discuss this subject with an eye toward basically UV complete examples, meaning field theories for which we are capable of writing down a Lagrangian, and aiming that at the condensed matter people who are perfectly capable of writing down Lagrangians. And we get some interesting transport results for them, but I put strange metallic in quotes because we do not get all of the phenomenology, and obviously these models are not the correct models of the materials. I should say I'm going to base this on a couple of examples of probably quite a large zoo of examples that we can control at large n, involving these wonderful collaborators, Sean, Joe, David Tong, Kristen, Shamit, Andreas, all of whom are here or have been part of the program. So the outline is very simple. I'm going to present these couple of field theory examples, which give linear resistivity. So that's the main output. And then I'll put my two cents worth in on this question that keeps coming up of what where this field could go, although and make some bad jokes, but of course nobody knows. I'm also expecting to sort of err on the side of being brief, so discussion is good. So I think I'll even skip the slides about the phenomenology, which we've heard about from the experts. There's this very rich and interesting set of measurements that Andrew talked about, for example, this morning. And from this, we can abstract a field theory question, which is just what does it take to model some of these behaviors, let's say linear resistivity, and also perhaps the funny exponents in the optical conductivity, in some large N gauge theory in which we can control the calculations, or any field theory in which we can control the calculations. We know that these are not realistic, but it's an interesting field theory problem, perhaps, to try and address. So, again, there already are a few examples of this. I think John will maybe focus on one tomorrow. Field theories with. Okay. Well, then it's perhaps good. That'll be less redundant than some stuff. So I'll do a couple of examples. So let me start with. Let me just go slowly here. So I'll basically describe two examples of this. The first one is a 2+1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory with flavors and some other fields that build up an excessive amount of supersymmetry, so-called n equals 4 supersymmetry in 2+1 dimensions. But the salient terms in the Lagrangian are the kinetic term for the gauge field, some SUNC structure of gauge fields with a coupling of mass dimension in 2+1 dimensions, fermions that couple to it, plus boson partners, and also some adjoint fermions and bosons that make this completion to supersymmetry that I just mentioned. So this kind of theory is, of course, very familiar to, I think, everybody. At weak coupling, there's a classical dimensional coupling that runs strong toward the infrared. But at one loop, the flavors screen that coupling with a term in the inverse coupling that goes like some sum of contributions of the different representations of the gauge group. In this particular case, it all adds up to just the number of flavors divided by the energy scale Q. So if you form the dimensionless coupling G bar here, then you reach a fixed point at weak coupling, that's 1 over NF. And of course, this is something quite independent of supersymmetry, which is interesting. And so far, it's at zero density, which makes this calculation controlled, as opposed to the ones that of course, Max reviewed for us, where you get, instead, you remain with strong infrared effects if you have a Fermi surface. So, yeah.
Yeah, so with the simplest gauge invariant fermion operator that you can write down, then NS possible composite or...
Well, so you can write down fermion. We'll be interested in... you might be interested in fermion flavors, which could be formed from the fermions combined with some bosonic partner to make an invariant under this SUNC group. And there's a flavor symmetry here, a UNF, which you can take as your proxy for electromagnetism, mm-hmm. if you wish. I'll develop
so with the bosons, you could make gauge invariant.
You can, yes.
You can.
You can, yes. Yes. And we will.
Mm-hmm. You can also use the gauge fields. You can use field strengths too?
Oh, there are also, of course, there are all sorts of gauge invariant operators in this theory, including...
You could also use the Adway fermion.
Yeah, you can use the Gauginos, or there's lots of stuff here. Sorry, do you have a specific...
No, I'm just wondering what the physical fermion would look like in terms of these...
Yeah, so one example to have in mind is just bilinear of the fundamental flavors and fundamental flavors. Mm-hmm. But there are others. Okay. Okay, now that weak coupling analysis, this is very familiar. This is a one loop term, beta function, which at weak coupling is sufficient to give you a consistent fixed point in particle physics. This was studied by Applequist and collaborators. But with all this supersymmetry, it actually holds also at strong coupling. So this is one of those theories where at least perturbatively, the beta function is one loop exact. And then the Tupp coupling is obtained by taking this dimensionless G bar squared coupling that I define times NC. And in terms of the fixed point of G bar, we get NC over NF. So as hopefully is becoming familiar, at large Tupp coupling, there can be a gravity description. And in this case, there is. And one I'll talk about it. And one interesting feature that it has is that these flavors, which in the field theory language are intrinsic to the existence of the fixed point, will also, in the gravity description, be intrinsic to the existence of the corresponding ADS4 solution in a simple way. So for those who were here last week, Tom Faulkner gave a beautiful pedagogical derivation of ADS-CFT. I won't assume that, but for those who were there, he focused on a case where you had a bunch of so-called D3 brains. Here we have different kinds of brains. But the idea is you consider some set of... is there a question? Some set of defects, some set of brains in the theory. These gravitationally... source the a deep gravitational potential well in which modes are redshifted to very low energies. And so in that region, there's a low energy effective field theory decoupled from gravity to good approximation at low energies. And one can take an extreme limit where one decouples all of the gravity in certain cases, like the one we'll talk about. In this example, it's important that we have two types of brains. One type give us the SUNC, the so-called color sector here. And another type of brain gives us the flavors. And this is understood in the just beautifully simple way that Joe introduced with the D brains. We have NZ brains with colors that live just on them. And then they're called flavor brains, which are higher dimensional, in this case, D6 brains, which stretch out to infinity in this brain construction, and on which there are flavor degrees of freedom, which are simply strings that stretch from the flavor brains to the color brains. Okay, so these have quantum numbers of a fundamental of the SUNC and also a fundamental of the UNF gauge group.
So in the last slide, so if it's 3 plus 1,
then...
It's 2 plus 1, so it's... If it were...
If it were 3 plus 1, then I know that you write down Lagrangian, I know what his lambda is. But in 2 plus 1, so I think that's what you... But I don't understand, how do I determine this g bar from the Lagrangian?
Well, the g bar was the fixed point value of the coupling, of the angles coupling. And then we have the usual test rules to give us the test coupling.
With dimensions made up by Q?
Yeah, the g bar here was the dimensionless coupling. So you know, this is a dimensionful coupling constant.
So that equation.
But you say if we were 3 plus 1, what would we have said?
I was just saying because it's a dimensionful, so I don't quite understand. That's
where the extra scale, which one's the extra scale?
Well, you just calculate the loop correction to the coupling, and it depends on the scale. And then, like with any coupling that has a non-zero engineering dimension, the effective coupling is made up by powers of energy. So
powers of Q.
Powers of Q. Yeah. So just think of it like any other dimensionful.
G bar is squared is just G squared divided or multiplied
by
Q.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
But I guess if you want to think about this in a Wilsonian way, then you just have to divide by the power of the cutoff. Is that?
I mean, you can.
The UV cutoff.
I think that's true. Yes. I don't know if there's a better way to explain this, but the dimensionless coupling has a clear fixed point here as it can be scaled towards zero energy.
Is Q the momentum here?
Let's work in Euclidean descriptions for this purpose. It's just the magnitude of the energy momentum factor. So yeah, I mean, people were interested in this theory partly as a kind of model of finite temperature QCD, where you get rid of the extra circle. Now the TIFF coupling will come back when we say the gravity theory. So we were going slowly. So we have these flavors, these colors, this so-called warped throat or redshifted throat. So we have low energy degrees of freedom in the gravity description, and in the field theory description, we have these open strings which have a low energy, which generally oscillate, but you can look at the lowest energy degrees of freedom, and you find the gauge theory that I described earlier. But now we can use that second picture of the same system, again, as Tom described last week. Get it a good effective description in terms of gravity instead. And if you take this extreme scaling limit where you remove the mouth of the throat, and you just have the redshifted region, you get a solution of gravity, which is ADS4 times 6 extra dimensions, which form a sphere, and with these flavor brains still being explicit on the gravity side, living at every radial position, so stretched along the radial position. So in this picture, left and right is the radial coordinate, which corresponds to scale in the field theory. And these flavors are just explicit brains still on the gravity side. Now, one way to think about these solutions, they're just our exact 10-dimensional solutions of Einstein's equations with these sources that people have written down. But I think an intuitive way to think about how the solution works is, which may help, certainly how I like to think about it, is the following. So this is a 10-dimensional Einstein theory of gravity. And let's compactify in the 6-dimensional sphere and ask what the effective potential is for things like the size of the sphere and the interaction strength G sub S of the strings. If you do that, one thing that you know is there is the Einstein term in 10 dimensions, which gives you an effective potential when you dimensionally reduce to four dimensions, which because of the positive curvature of the sphere is actually negative. It scales like 1/r², the r being the size of that S6 because of the curvature. And then there are positive contributions to the energy from these flavor brains, which are positive sources of stress energy, wrapping some subspace, in this case a 3-sphere, from which you can derive their energy. And also, something that's important is that these color brains source a certain flux, which is what remains of them, a certain electromagnetic or certain magnetic, higher dimensional magnetic flux with six legs that lives on the 6th sphere. And that makes a contribution to the energy also, which makes the sphere want to push out. So basically, the curvature makes the sphere want to contract, the flux makes it want to push out, as do the flavors, and altogether, this stabilizes the two so-called scalar field moduli that I mentioned. The obvious one here in this picture is the size of the 6th sphere, and the other one that I mentioned, which is not quite as obvious, is the interaction strength of the string, which is also a scalar field in the problem. So, this is a very simple potential that one can minimize, and one finds a solution with these values for the radius and the string coupling. So the radius you want to be large to get into gravity, and it goes like a power of nc over nf. So this is where the Itauch coupling has appeared on the gravity side, where it should, and the string coupling is can also be small at the same time that the radius is large, and that gives us our control of the solution. Now another thing I want to emphasize here on this side of the duality is that these brains, which gave us the flavors, are not probes in this solution. They're intrinsic to getting a solution at all. John? In the 10 dimensions, it varies, but it doesn't vary in the ADS score. So there is a complete. Well, it does. There is a six, if you like. There's the usual six brain solution, NF six brain solution in the S6. And people have written down this solution. What I'm doing here is a little bit heuristic because I just kept track of the I kept track of the overall size and the string coupling. The upshot is that the string coupling, of course, does not vary in the ADS four direction.
This is a theory with 16 superjointless, and on the gravity side, it's like the 3D n equals 4 theory?
It's 3D n equals 4, that's just 4D n equals 2.
Yeah.
Right? So it's 8.
Well, 16 once you superconformalize
it. Once you superconformalize it, yes. Okay, tell me if I'm going too slow or too fast. Ask another question. This is really for you guys. Anyway, the flavors are not probes. One nice thing about the duality is that the finding fixed points of beta function is basically the same problem as so-called fixing the moduli, taking these scalars that descend from the extra dimensions and finding a solution where they are fixed and where they don't vary in the remaining large dimensions, which is, I think, a very simple but nice thing. And so you see this on both sides. The flavors are crucial. Parenthetically, as also came up in the introduction last week, there are lots of ways to compactify string theory. Most manifolds are not spheres. And there are enormous numbers of types of stress energy sources that are available and that are generically turned on. And so there's a very strong argument and quite detailed scenarios describing such compactifications down to anti de Sitter space or more cosmological spaces, which is a picture that you should have in mind. It's not just all about these simple cases, but it's in these simplest cases that we have the best understanding of the dual field theory, where we can write this Lagrangian very easily.
It's a little bit, given that these two slides, you put the A in brackets.
I put the A.
So it's called the room A. Are there any known example theories that are not in ADS space that have a dual boundary of, I guess?
We have basically a semi-holographic dual for de Sitter space. It's a very interesting subject, but not relevant to condensed matter. So what happens is that, I can tell you a bit later, but basically what happens there is that you have low energy regions, but you don't have this strict decoupling limit where the gravity totally decouples. So you have,
if it's going to be a fixed point, it's going to have the whole symmetries of the formal fixed point.
Why does it take to conform?
Yeah, there are lots of solutions which have none of these symmetries, where scalar fields are not stabilized but roll radially, and those describe renormalization group flows, theories with non-trivial running of the couplings. So here, I made this point, the fixed points of wave function correspond to these minima of the potential. And if you don't have those minima, you have a much more general class of examples with running couplings. Was that your question?
I'm just wondering, since A was in brackets, could this move?
Well, the A was in brackets for another reason that I'm kind of a bitch. Anyway. I didn't mean to derail things with that. So we have this field theory. Now let's do what we want to get to, some sort of condensed matter-ish thing, by putting it at finite density. So to do that, as you've heard a lot about, you take some gravity side gauge potential, the time component, turn it on with a source term that is related to the chemical potential that you want to introduce, and solve the equations of motion. When you do that, you can read off the charge density from the behavior of the solution. Physically, it makes a lot of sense. You put in a source, you get a response. And here, in this particular theory, there are lots of symmetries to draw from, and we'll use two types. One is a so-called, a certain kind of U1 called a Ramone U1, which is potential field, I'll see. Which is sourced by yet another kind of D brain, and that'll be interesting. These are so-called D0 brains. And so let's start by putting the system at finite density with this U1. Okay. Now, we can anticipate, perhaps, that there could be a solution where the D0 brains, which are charged under this U1, can sit in this solution. They're drawn down toward the redshifted region by the gravity, but they're repelled by the electric field, and maybe there's a balanced solution of that kind. And in fact, you find that there is if you ask this question. So let's solve this system with the U1 turned on for the combined fields, the density of the D0 brains, the vector potential, and the geometry. And we'll allow for this geometry to take the a more general form than ADS 4. We'll allow it, in particular, to take the kind of Lipschitz form with an arbitrary dynamical exponent, as was introduced in original work by Kachu, Liu, and Mulligan, in a more sort of quote-unquote phenomenological way. Here we'll find it come out in the top from the in a field theory whose Lagrange we can write that is from the top down in string theory, so if you do this, the answer is that you get a solution of these coupled equations with the feature that I described heuristically just a second ago, and with the dynamical exponent coming out as v equals 2. Yeah.
Yeah, is this generic for ADS 4 compact equations? Would you see it for ABJM as well?
You would see this if you did D0 brains in ABJM, or if generally you wrapped a D brain around a factor in a product manifold that you compactified on. If you consider the more general landscape where things are complicated and warped and so on, then there's probably a landscape of Zs.
Another question?
Yeah.
In theory, if the field theory had exactly marginal perturbations, but I think the D0s could destabilize it, like, you know, along one of the exactly marginal directions. So are you kind of assuming there aren't any, or there are, but for detailed reasons they don't get sourced, or?
Well, this, I think this is an isolated fixed point. I have to think about the supersymmetry.
Because I'm just thinking of Maxwell scalars in bulk, so they can get kicked and run a long distance.
Which ones do you have in mind? Let's see.
I would guess this with 16 supercharges probably has many marginal.
Okay, sorry. Yes, of course it has some marginal direction. I don't know that they're exactly marginal.
Hey, can I stop you? More dimensionary question,
I'm sorry, simple. Let me just finish answering that. There's a solution that's this.
So I mean, you just check that there's some solution.
Well, okay, you're asking basically is that solution isolated, but anyway, sorry, go ahead. Sorry, I can actually answer this. it's been a while. We have actually checked, and this is actually part of some unpublished work with Joe, that these things can go at angle and still preserve the radius force about one direction that does exist. I don't think these D0 brains need to be oriented in such a way that they force that angle. I mean, that's basically your question. Sorry, please.
So I see the metric. Yeah. And there's a gamma something of V and gamma X of V.
Yes, so this is...
So those gammas are zero, that's just A dx.
If all these things were 1 over V squared...
Well, 1 over V squared.
Then it would be A dx.
Then it would be A dx.
Thank you, I should have said that. So we solved for these gammas, and we found that they go like 1 over z to the 4th instead.
1 over v to the 4th.
Z to the 4th to get the dynamical exponent in this place, and then here it's just, well, sorry, the ratio of these two gives z equals 2, I just leave it at that.
So the thing that corresponds to Lipschitz, the metric that corresponds to Lipschitz is minus dt squared over v to the fourth plus dx squared plus dy squared minus squared.
It's more that the ratio of the exponent here is the ratio to the exponent there is 2. That's what I should have said.
So
1 over v to the a plus 1 over dt squared plus 1 over v to the b dx squared plus dy squared, and the ratio of those is what determines the critical.
There's something that's important about what he's saying.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's see, what he's
saying. Yes, what he's saying is correct.
What I'm saying is true. Okay. So this kind of solution is known to have a field theory to it?
That's what I'm telling. That was the whole point of belaboring this.
So you go to the chemical potential.
We started with a theory we know. We turned on a chemical potential with the symmetry that we have. We found that there are objects in it that get. For which there's a solution where there's a density of them in the bulk, so we know what this field theory is.
So this would be an example of a non-ADS space that has a field theory to it.
For sure, yes.
Okay.
This is an example. And
question.
Yes.
Do you just trying to understand the procedure, do you start again from scratch putting in the D0 brains, or do you take an ansatz?
Well, we're starting with the same theory, which as you know in the bulk has D0 brain baryons,
right.
And we just ask do they condense in a sense.
No, but I was just trying to understand at what point you which equations of motion do you resolve, the 10-dimensional equations of motion?
Ah, very good. So here we wrote down we solved these equations of motion where the baryon density appears here. This is the mass redshifted down, coupled to the gauge field we're talking about. This is the gravity stuff written in 4 dimensions. But then we did go back and ask, did this muck with the moduli we'd stabilized before? And the answer was no, there's a final instability I'll come to later that will be...
Sorry, can I pull you back a bit?
Please.
So just to make sure I understand, I don't know if it's relevant. So you said that you go through this procedure of taking a known field theory, which has a known gravity dual, and then you turn on the chemical potential that couples to some conserved global dual charge.
Yes.
And then you look for other solutions of the bulk theory.
We want to understand the solution, having done that. That's what we're doing.
The solution with the constraint that the boundary theory has is a kind of chemical potential.
Yes.
And then, so you find the Lipschitz type solution.
Right, in the IR.
Yeah. So the statement that you said this yield A and yield A plus 2, for any A, that's a solution. Is that the statement?
No. We solved for Z equals 2. I mean, Sean, we happened to parameterize it in a way where we didn't land on 4 and 2 here, but you could change variables and do that. We solved for this. Okay, we know all the parameters here. We know the mass, the charge of the zero brains. And we just solved all the equations of motion we derived at z equals 2 for this case.
So the most general thing z equals 2, you said, has 1 over the A and 1 over the
A. It's just a coordinate transformation. That doesn't give us anything new.
But so that's equivalent.
It's equivalent
to having A equals 2.
Yes. Like A equals 4, I think you meant.
The dx squared is dy squared. That coefficient is 1 over.
Basically, we're asking for a different scaling between the space and the time dimensions as we move in this coordinate v.
I understand that, but I'm wondering whether there's any significance to the scaling between the dv squared over v squared and the scaling of the coefficient of the...
No, because this term doesn't change if you start.
I could say you could do it.
You can just do a coordinate change. Yeah. Sorry for that confusion earlier.
So is that equal to 2 to only solution?
It's the solution with these ingredients. There are other U1 charges with other sources for them that you could, talk about and find different answers. So we did this both in this top-down way, so to speak, and also at a more phenomenological level, where we got a formula for z in terms of basically m and the charge of these guys. So it does vary.
You can vary, or
we think you can vary.
But in the top-down, the z equal 2 comes out.
In this top-down, kind of the dumbest thing you do is that z equals 2 pops out.
I see, and this z equal 2 describes. So, for example, if I computed some kind of current correlation function of the SUN or of the UNF symmetry, that would have z equal to 2 scaling, or?
It depends what you want to do. The thing we can do is take a U1 out of the UNF, which lives in this geometry that we've talked about, but that alone is a probe of this geometry, and so we can calculate the transport for that guy, which is what I'm about to talk about, without worrying about his back reaction on this solution, and that's where it gets, unsatisfactory in the sense of being relying on a large NC over NF.
Let me ask a much more basic question. Transport is always subtle, but
okay.
Just if I calculate some correlation functions, mm-hmm. which correlation functions have z equal to 2 scaling?
So the ones that are that have to do with just operators that are dual to gravity modes on this Lipschitz geometry will feel this z equals 2.
Well, the energy momentum tensor.
The energy momentum tensor is the key, universal example of this. So that's an example.
Specific
heat. So there are also all sorts of gravity modes on the sphere that you could play with. And
so how does the specific heat scale with T squared?
But transport is also fun here, so that's what I wanted to get to.
Maybe that's just one more thing. Just there's a lot of rumors that I carry on in my head, so just to make contact.
Yes, yeah.
So you're saying if you actually take a theory with a known gravity dual and then you take a perturb it by going to turning on a finite chemical potential,
yes.
You don't find black holes and all those things that other people have been.
Well, that's part of the point of this week, I think, is to show you the zoo of examples that exist. So right, it's not just that you get a riser and origin black hole. That's a very interesting example, but it's not, you know, really universal. It's very interesting, but it's not.
No, the theory doesn't tell you what you get.
This theory tells us that we get.
The
string theory compactification that you choose tells you what you get, and in this case, this is what you get.
Well, so these are for different compactifications.
These are for different compactifications.
Six-dimensional.
Yeah, these are different field theories, different compactifications, which correspond in the gravity side to different compactifications. Yeah, and you really should, in my opinion, have this in mind that it's. For better or for worse, there's a landscape of these things.
On the finite T, it still is a black hole, for which its geometry would be covered by a horizon.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Black holes.
But
it's
zero temperature.
But I think he meant it's not, you know, an extremal riser and origin black hole is not what it is. Gary?
But are you saying that you don't have a riser and origin solution in this theory? I mean, if you set the D0 grand charge to zero, you put it in as a possibility, but I'm wondering if. If you didn't turn it on,
Zero brains are a U1 density.
Yeah, and then you would get a horizon.
Right, so you have to compare the free energy to.
That's right.
And I think this wins a bit like these stars.
Okay. That's what I thought. So there's a question of which one is more stable.
So is there?
Yeah, exactly. It's,
is there a classification of all kinds of things that can, for the various ways in which you can compact it?
People have thought about this for entirely different reasons, having to do with today's Nobel Prize, actually.
There's no question.
Yeah, never mind.
Sorry.
You're invited.
I got a wake-up call.
I remember you came and visited and asked about the Sitter holography, and it made me so happy. But anyway, I'm going to not answer that question because I think it's not, we're not done classifying these things yet. But what I'm trying to do is show you concrete examples we can study, which are, you know, fairly simple. And also try and give you the perspective that there is, you know, a huge zoo of things out there that we haven't classified, although there's been a lot of work in that. But maybe others could speak to that more, you know, with more force, but that's the sort of zero-theory answer. Okay, so this is where we are. Now let's do transport. So again, we have this statistical gauge fields, SUNC, with flavors coupled to those. At finite density, why am I on battery? So let's just see what the transport is. And this is a generalization of just some very elegant work of Karcher-Bannon, where we just adapted it to this Lifshitz situation, but they did the hard work of building how to do this in this context. And what we'll consider now is the other kind of flavor symmetry that I mentioned, which is a UNF in general on these six rings. Let's break it up into a U1 times an SUNF that we'll ignore and consider this U1 overall factor, say, and put that at finite density. We could also just move one of the brains and in this angular direction that actually Shannon anticipated and just do that. It's similar. And the next thing I want to tell you is that there's a very interesting effective action on the gravity side for the degrees of freedom that live on these brains. It's not just a Maxwell action. It is what's known as DBI action. And it's known, it's been computed in various ways. Under these fancy stringy dualities, it's related to the Born-Enfeld action describing motion of relativistic particles, where you have a square root of 1 minus x dot squared. This square root I've written here, which is basically a generalization of the volume of the brain, the square root of the determinant of the metric, modified by this additional term which involves the gauge fields on the brain. Okay, so there's a UV complete understanding of this action, which involves a highly non-trivial sequence of terms on the gravity side. And using that, taking the equations of motion, putting in the chemical potential, which corresponds to a boundary condition in the gravity calculation, and then deriving the so putting in an electric field, deriving the current, and therefore the resistivity just by dividing, you get this answer in this theory. So we in general, if we varied z, we would get t to the 2 over z over the charge density. So since we landed on z equals 2 in this example, we get linear resistivity. This is not true all the way down to zero energy, but it is over a wide range of scales that's controlled by the large radius and large end of the model. Covered.
Oh, okay. Non-unit z just goes in via the metric. Is that the only place it appears in that curve?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just in the metric.
Yeah. And but now should I think of this as, so this is different from the Ramond
yes.
U1 you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
So is it that for this U1 you've done the analogous calculation of the previous slide and shown that z is 2, or?
No, what we've done is, it's somewhat analogous, but we're talking about transport in some spatial direction, and we're just asking what is the conductivity.
But how do I know what z is?
Because this is on top of what I already did. So there's the z from the first U1 that we already turned on.
Oh.
Now, in that background, let me answer your question better. We are working in this we pull out this one U1, and at this point I'm going to start working in the probe approximation. Okay, so that's what you're asking. This action is very non-trivial, but it doesn't encode back reaction on the metric. The metric acts very non-trivially on the flavor sector, so it's got all sorts of interactions that have been mediated by the bulk, but we're not back reacting on the bulk. Okay, that's the situation.
So if you did, you'd guess that formula's getting down to temperatures of order 1 over n or something?
It's something like that. There's some lambdas and n's, yeah.
Do you control over the low temperature?
No, but what goes on at low temperatures is very intriguing. It's related to this stuff we were talking about with 2KF we're trying to understand. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that in a second.
Just to clarify, you're turning on now two chemical potentials. Is that right?
That's right. The first one was to get the Lipschitz solution. The second one was to the electromagnetism.
I'm still confused. Sorry. So you're looking at transport now in the non-back-reacted U1, but in the field for which the density is relevant to the back-reacted U1.
Right. Let me reverse this, and you'll understand. Maybe it'll be a little bit clearer. If you just take a flavor sector like this and just ask, imagine it lived on a Lipschitz background with some z. You do the transfer, you get this answer, and you notice that z equals 2 would be kind of nice. Then you ask, well, in the same theory, with the ingredients that it has, is there a Lipschitz solution if you put in, other ingredients? And in this case, so you can just take this in the reverse, put in this other U1 and solve, and you find not only do you find Lipschitz, but you also land on z. So that's being said.
Chris? Okay. So if you've just done probe rain in z equals 2 without asking where z equals 2 comes from, you'd always get this answer.
Yeah, I'm just trying to give a complete top-down example.
Two related questions. Yeah. One, you can study the transport of the original U1.
Yeah, you can certainly do all these things, and you get all sorts of different answers that depend on the parameters, and that's it's very important.
Good. And then the second question, you have, this U1, the probe rain action isn't really a probe. It comes with a factor of NF, which is large in this.
Well, NF is large, but that's why I was saying now we're pulling out a U1 out of that. That's all.
So you're sticking an additional probe rain in on top of
it. I'll just take one of the UNF1s if you want. It doesn't matter.
Because you can't ask the problem then.
It would be interesting, I think, to ask it about about the large set of NF, because they were intrinsic to the solution. But just for this purpose, I've just started. It doesn't have to be extra. It can be one of the original ones. So just turn on the U1 on one of them.
Why did you turn on the chemical potential?
sorry?
Why did you turn on the
density? Oh, just to model finite density in the same way that you always would. But again,
you can just run on like that,
the JT and the denominator.
Yeah, yeah, that's.
Was this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Well, you just can calculate it.
Well, it's plausible that connectivity should be proportional.
I mean, it's plausible, although it's a non trivial result given these.
So the first one, you're just using it to support the relation you want.
Correct.
So when you say it's intermediate range of scales, is it temperatures above the...
Temperature can be way below the chemical potential.
It can be way below.
Way below the chemical potential, yeah.
Chemical potential that you turned on to get the finite density.
That's right. But using large N and or large lambda.
So what sets the lower limit to which...
It's some combination of the radius of the space, the tilt coupling, and density. So there are various interesting things that happen toward the IR, which are controlled by various combinations of those things. We have it all derived in the paper. I was going to mention a couple of things. This is where the whole thing starts to get unrealistic with these large values of N and lambda.
Could you just compute the resistivity for the RR current?
You could. So as Christian said, you could. I forget the answer for that, but people have done calculations of that kind.
And, you get a delta function.
So one thing to say here is that the flavors here are the leading contribution to the conductivity of what I called electric charge, because the bulk is not charged under that. So that's a nice thing. It's true. You could instead think about the transport of the bulk stuff in itself, and I actually don't know the answer for that, but it would be done by the same techniques, and it may have been done. Maybe.
You'll get a plot like the one I showed yesterday. It's only working that way. It just goes. So those frequency, and it will just go down with some power. It's going to be omega squared, and then there'll be a delta function.
I see.
So the reason she's getting a finite DC connectivity is because this other thing is in a probe limit. I guess maybe you'll say more about that.
I'm saying it here.
You already take into account the fact that you cannot relax the momentum.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's said here, and it was pointed out in the original Carcio band and stuff. This D0 density breaks translation invariance on the face of it. We don't really know if it ultimately forms a lattice or something like that, but I think it seems like it could. And that might be interesting because it breaks translation invariance, but it's still finely spaced. But regardless of that, even if we had taken a continuum Lifshitz theory, the analog of the lattice is the large NC dark sector, which doesn't start moving appreciably until you get to time scales of order. And so this is a point that's been made before. One can do similar things with the optical conductivity, and the calculations are conceptually the same, and here are the kinds of results that you get. I won't belabor this, but you can also get interesting exponents here. And with some of these more general solutions that we touched on earlier with rolling scalar fields, you might be able to decouple the two exponents that I mentioned. One of the interesting ways that the theory breaks down in the deep IR is to do with this square root action that I mentioned. If you think about the fact that this is a string theory, and you have this electric field which grows toward the infrared, you actually find that because strings, the open strings that live on these flavor brains, have ends which are charged oppositely, the electric field can push out on those charges, try to stretch the string out, while at the same time its intrinsic tension tries to shrink it. And you can get in a situation where the two actually balance and the effective tension goes to zero. And at that point, stringing effects should be very important. And this is an old question that a number of people are trying to revisit and hopefully finally solve. to do with whether this sort of effect might lead to 2KF singularities, the kind that has been talked about, related to, for example, Sabir's talk and some of the stuff that that Matthew's been looking at, for example. And obviously, one would like to do this without the large N stuff. And
there's also a KF singularity. That's in principle the possibility of just looking at a fermion correlator and asking the fermion source.
Yeah, we haven't model built in just probe fermions in this. We have fermions that are parts of gauge invariant operators. The kinds of things I'm talking about would be more like these things where you have kind of bound states whose constituents are fermions that might have.
So we
don't know if that will pan out.
That's a harder calculation to do to just look at fermion.
People have computed fermion correlators.
You can do that, but we're trying not to add anything more.
I just want to look in the density or in the current correlator, see how much you can extract.
Yeah, and again the maybe there are other things that we should do, but this is one of them. okay. Now there's another instability that I should talk about that can afflict these kinds of models, which is where the extra degrees of freedom that I mentioned from that extra supersymmetry, which are scalar fields, get drawn actually up these warp throats. So this is something that is intuitive if you start thinking about the gravity solutions, it does happen in the example that I mentioned. Although at large NC, it's again one of these things that just takes forever, and at finite temperature, this instability goes away, becomes more stable. Okay, so there was a second example that I wanted to cover, which fortunately we already heard about in the Blackboard talk last week. It's a Chern-Simons theory with the lattice of defects, for which one can do the same level of top-down construction and work with the symmetries that you have and derive, in this case, a locally critical sector of fermions, which turn out to have the right dimension to produce a marginal Fermi liquid in the way that was outlined in earlier work by the MIT group and so on, but with features here that kind of get around some of the problems that had. I'd be happy to go over this, but I don't want to take extra time this week when there are so many talks. But just suffice it to say that there's another theory for which we can write the Lagrangian, which produces, in again, a kind of extreme large N limit, a concrete marginal Fermi liquid. With the dimension of the fermion operator that you require dropping out.
Does this break time reversal symmetry?
Does it break time?
No, I don't think so. I don't.
Yeah, it has. That's right. It has. I should have written. There's a un times un, and one of them has k, and one has minus k. This is schematic. But it's a very specific and known Lagrangian again.
And is KF visible? I don't know if these sides are fermions.
In this case, one can treat it in the nice way that the MIT group and Joe and Tom Faulkner did, where you basically take what is a strongly coupled sector that is critical in 0 plus 1 dimensions on these lattice points and couple it to a free theory of fermions that you put on a Fermi surface and just mix the two, and you obtain the marginal Fermi liquid fermion correlator from that. And the nice thing here is basically that in this range of scales that we cover with our approximations, we don't actually have an ADS2 solution with its gigantic entropy, Instead, we have these defects which lie on ADS2 subspaces of an ambient ADS4. And also, the dimension of the operator that we require doesn't depend on the momentum, you know, in the two spatial dimensions. So in that way, it's in some sense, you know, a more tractable example.
So this has zero entropy.
Well, we don't know what happens in the very deep IR. But over the range of scales where we get this interesting behavior, which we can really, you know, it's a trivial thing on the gravity side, but it would be non-trivial to see this from the field theory. Over this range of scales, you don't see an entropy buildup. But in the deep IR, we don't know. It would be, you know, this picture of the warping is basically a picture of how the two spatial dimensions are shrinking in the geometry in terms of their proper size. So in ADS2, they just stay the same size. But in ADS2 times R2, they stay the same size. But in this solution, they shrink exponentially. So there might be a very tiny ADS2 down here, for example. We don't know. But an interesting question. Okay. So I guess we didn't go too far over. Again, you know, this can be covered in as much detail as anybody wants. So I just have some comments about the whole subject, which I don't really need to make. But people have asked, you know, where could this possibly go? And, you know, one thing that we can do is this kind of thing of just extract some question that's clean. Can you get linear resistivity under control? Answer it, maybe test Spolk theorems about field theory, like things about this 2KF or whatever we might be able to test by exhibiting field theories that you know, produce behavior that people just thought was, you know, should happen, or conversely, give counterexamples to what they thought. And that kind of thing has happened before in a way that's impacted experiment, even in particle physics and cosmology, for example, where there's been a lot longer to develop the corresponding interface, where you don't actually have to, you know, take every model literally, but you can abstract from them, you know, new structures to study and even look for in measurement, or, you know, just a more systematic understanding of, you know, the kinds of phenomenology that are possible. And that's happened in these other fields. And it seems like condensed matter with a much richer set of examples could well enjoy the same sort of thing. Finally, this is the bad joke. We do seem to still be in the probe approximation. And what that says to me is that you can, you know, I put quotes because nobody should typecast themselves. Maybe we can all just be physicists. But those who are condensed matter people should be solving our problems, really. I mean, and yeah.
Tell us what your problems are. One?
Here's one. Okay. So let me stop there.
This resistivity goes as T to the 2 over Z.
Yeah.
So the same thing, sort of, if you think about Max's system of a fluctuating boson in a fairy surface, he has Z equals 3. And first approximation, you get the same, T to the 2 over 3 is what you get, not for the decay rate of a carrier. But the actual resistivity is a square of that, basically, because of fairy surface effect.
Right.
And in fact, he would want to have Z equals 4.
Does he know what ZG1 is?
Well, that just, let me just finish the sentence. In this case, the Z equals 2 is sort of at that same level where we're not really seeing the Fermi surface yet. And if we see the Fermi surface, we might find that we actually needed Z equals 4.
Correct.
The systems are not so totally different.
I agree. Okay, I should have said that. I mean, you said that in your discussion earlier, that this is another extreme limit of control where it can do the same sort of thing. And what I would have said is that we want to do what Max is doing with some kind of controlled calculations and then solve for Z at the end of the day. So here we kind of viewed it that way. We were in this extreme limit. We solve for Z. We want Z equals 2, you know, in this toy model. But if we could just do the whole problem, maybe use the same method and find a difference. Does that make sense?
Well, I think in our case, in the physical case, even the square answer, even the form of the answer is still a simplification because it doesn't take umlaut and
integer. It'd be worse than that. That is, you can be an answer. I mean, that's the largest.
Most optimistic,
I mean, Max's. So this DC resistivity is all about the transistor how you're relaxing momentum and some other stuff. And then all these models that people do, the Maxters, don't have that. So I mean, it's like, well, you have to cut, you don't have to do the field, it's just a delta function.
Wait, he doesn't go into his bosons at all?
No, but that's tactile. That's not about resolving the Drude field, that's more about perturbations in quantum critical sector. And so the fact that there's an extra layer here, so we have the programs, and as you said, this is all the N C time before the momentum comes back together. That's really an extra effect that in Max's model, you need some umlaut, or you need something else that's going to dump the momentum. So I don't think it's like that. It's sort of apples and oranges. I mean, it's different regimes of resistivity.
Well, isn't it that you would want? I thought yesterday you were saying that you have this quantum critical sector into which you could dump stuff, and then also into a lattice, and maybe you try and include all of it and unsolved for the parameters.
Right, but to make a clean separation, you need to take this problem in.
Yeah, although here again, I'm kind of talking about this fixation breaking density.
You say using the ring system, the way you will scatter the decay of momentum can affect the external trance.
It can affect
the external. So which one is it?
I think everybody's saying the same thing, which is here we can see what happens when you dump into the critical sector only, and you would want other things.
And the critical sector can't give it back.
The critical sector takes a long time to give it back.
Yeah.
But again, in this particular example, there's this intriguing density of stuff that actually breaks translation invariance, and I'm not sure that we explained that as much as we could have. It may even just be an emergent lattice in this problem. And it's, again, it's an order one contribution to the solution, so it's not this stuff, this density of quote-unquote baryons, this one not.
So the thing with the frequency-dependent conductivity, So with this time scale at which this critical stuff gives it back, that time scale is 1 over nc or...
That time scale is nc, right?
The time scale is 1 over nc. So this entire calculation is the conductivity of frequencies above that scale, and you're not willing to say anything about what happens in the true DC limit.
That argument is just that, since it's strongly coupled, I guess it's based on counting degrees of freedom.
The momentum will go anywhere, so if you look at entropy, at the end of the day, there's a normal entropy.
So it's a data function, and then as rho, some frequency which goes to zero with then c in some manner, then you go up to some finite result, and the temperature dependence of that is what we calculate. Is that the correct statement?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know what the
If you have done, I guess, any electricity energy and see how the oscillation would raise.
That's interesting. I think Sean's done calculations this kind of time.
In this particular example, which you...
This is the example where the charge is coming from behind the horizon, and this is where the non fermions are going to be done. But there's just no fermions anywhere in sight, so there are no oscillations, there are no KFs, but there might still be... They're all fractionalized, if you like. They're all gauged, they're all... The flux is coming out of a horizon, and so They're just, it's a possible mental place, but we can tell you later.
So what's kind of density then? I mean, there's some matter as that finite density.
Fractionalized fermions, perhaps.
So there's still gauge invariant fermions, the composites of these which will have some structure, right?
That's right, but you probably need some stringy effects to see that, because they're sort of behind the horizon. They're not sitting.
Probe rate that you've added, though, it's super symmetric before turning on the D0 brain charge. So there are scalars that carry these flavor charges as well as fermions. So is it clear that you've isolated the scalar physics?
You've isolated the scalar.
Yeah, like why should I think that I have fundamental fermions carrying this charge instead of fundamental scalars?
Well, you know the spectrum of the serine, you know what it is.
Right.
I think nothing's condensed. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so there seems to be this belief, I guess Matthew and other people have worked on that. If you have a finite density state and you don't condense, don't break the U1 symmetry, then there should be some momentum, generically some momentum space structure in the wave functions. So whether it's fermions or bolons is maybe not so much.
Okay. You weren't just asking about the spectrum, you're asking what's contributing to this.
That's right.
Yeah. So sorry, Max.
So this sigma of omega, that's supposed to go to t equals zero. Is there still a low frequency cutoff in terms of the chemical potential over some NC, or is this expected to be true too?
We lose control of the solution for several reasons in the IR. So if that's the question, it's partly this thing about the interesting stringy effect of the tension going to zero, these long strings becoming relevant, but also there's back reaction on the metric from that one of the things.
So it's some kind of mu over some NC to some power.
Yeah.
Let's thank you again.